The Teacher in the Temple, Part 2. Now, as was their custom, his parents regularly went their way, year by year, into Jerusalem during the feast of the Passover. So, when he came to be 12 years old, after their finishing going up, according to the custom of the feast, and upon finishing the days, during their process of returning, the boy Jesus continued to remain in Jerusalem. Yet inferring from custom for him to be within the group journeying together, they went a day's way, and then began seeking him back among the relatives and acquaintances. Then upon not finding him, they returned into Jerusalem, continuing in searching again for him. Later, after 3 days, it happened that they found him within the temple courts, continuing in sitting within the midst of the teachers, constantly listening to them, as well as repeatedly making inquiries and putting questions to them. Now all the folks, continuing to listen to and hear him, began standing outside themselves in amazement and were repeatedly astonished at his understanding and discerning responses. And so, upon seeing him, his parents were bewildered and overwhelmed. Then his mother said to him, "Child, why do you treat us in this manner? Look and consider, your father and I were caused constant pain as we continued searching for you." So he said to them, "Why is it that you were trying to find me? Have you not seen, so as to now know, that it continues binding and necessary for me to be within the midst of the men belonging to my father?" And yet they themselves did not understand the result of the flow which he spoke to them. And so he walked back down with them and came into Nazareth and continued being set in a supportive arrangement for them. His mother also continued carefully watching, noting, and keeping all these sayings within her heart. And so Jesus kept on cutting a passage forward, making progress in the wisdom, as well as in maturity and physical stature, and in grace and favour beside God and mankind. And that reading was from Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 52, and it was the Jonathan Mitchell translation. In part one of The Teacher in the Temple, we explored the need to develop conscious listening as a core spiritual literacy skill for participating in Logopraxis group life. To listen to one another in a conscious way involves making an effort to be aware of our own state as we listen to what is being shared. In part one, we saw that the ability to step outside of the self or proprium, to observe what it strives to direct us towards when left to its own rule, is what allows us to see what is of the Lord. To be in the effort to hear the Lord in another is one aspect of what it means to love the neighbour or what is of the Lord in another. To listen consciously is not about judging whether another's state is of the Lord or not. It is instead about attending to the thoughts and affections arising within our own state as we respond to what we are hearing in what is being shared. We are watching for the thoughts and affections that want to judge, condemn, criticize, praise, analyze, and solve, rather than simply listening for spiritual principles or truths found within what's being shared. When these self-crediting qualities and condemning tendencies of the proprium are observed and acknowledged, it affirms that what the word teaches about the nature of the hellish proprium is true. We see it as something active in our direct experience. It also affirms the word's presence in our mind as the Lord himself, as truth that communicates his good, that is always working to expose what is opposed to the life of heaven, so that what is of heaven might become the basis for our life. In the moment that we truly recognize that what the word has called out and named is the hellish proprium, it is effectively shunned. The act of shunning the evils of this infernal opprobrium as sins against the Lord is the true meaning of charity, for then the word is acknowledged to be the Lord. From a logopraxis perspective, this is what it means to seek the Lord and make affirmative connection in another's work in the word with that of our own work in the word. When this type of spiritual literacy skill is practiced, then every individual's work with the word when shared contributes to creating a unique expression of spiritual community for each receiver, the sum of the parts contributing to a deepening sense of the whole being the Lord as the word, as a divine human within our midst. The ground that we meet on then becomes holy and sacred and filled with awe. Now all the folks continuing to listen and hear him began standing outside themselves in amazement and were repeatedly astonished at his understanding and discerning responses. It was Luke chapter 2, verse 47. In part one of the teacher in the temple, we also began to explore the memorable relation referred to as the contests of wisdom, found in conjugal love with the numbers 132 to 136. The men who met together for the first question, see conjugal love 132, also demonstrated this idea that in spiritual life, each state builds upon what was of the Lord in the previous one, and also that each unique contribution, when woven together, offers a richer experience of the whole. The second question in this meeting in heaven begins with the men seeking to first find the truth of the proposition of the question being asked, and so each puts forward ideas to corroborate it. And reading from Conjugal Love 133, the truth of the proposition thus being established, they then direct their minds to investigate and discover the ends and causes whereby they might unfold and disclose this arcanum. So each region in the order of the north, west, south and east then offer their rationale as to why the truth is true and the purpose of its good. Each group speaks in turn, as they did with the first question, building on what the previous group offered. A conclusion is then drawn that incorporates the ideas from each of the four regions. And you can find that specifically in Conjugal Love 133 to 134. This seeking to first establish the truth of the question before moving into why or how it is true requires a deeper level of both the individual and group work than that of the first question, where the men simply move straight into attempting to answer the question. This movement towards a more collaborative approach in finding a common first principle from which to work from parallels the change in our work from round one to round two of our logopraxis life group. Like the men in the first question, round one of a logopraxis life group is mostly about each practitioner having an opportunity to share their work while the rest of the group listens, working to attend to their state so that they might hear spiritual principles in what is being shared. In round two, however, we are seeking to somehow draw all that has been heard in round one together into a collective of spiritual principles that are universal in nature in that they have the elements of person, place, time and space removed. By removing these external elements, each practitioner is then more easily able to resonate with what is shared in relation to their own experience of the word, of its process within them. So, the common first principle that is agreed upon, i.e. the truth of the proposition that is established, is that in order to find the Lord in the midst, we must remove the external elements of the material world in our thinking. That is, we must remove person, place, time and space so that we might think spiritually to hear and see what is shared as spiritual states and realities. If we can do this in round two, then what is placed before the group becomes a collective of spiritual truths for all, because each practitioner can more easily see how it is true in relation to their own experiences of the word. When this is seen, it more fully supports the Lord's end, which is the regeneration of the human mind. Thus, the good of the word as the Lord is made more visible in our midst. He is the end, the purpose of its good, that the men in the contest of wisdom were seeking. The need to understand why the truth is true and the purpose of its good is also captured in the arrival of the father and mother at the temple as they finally find their son Jesus and start to question him. They've been searching for him for 3 days, so we can imagine the sense of relief they must have felt on finding him, but then their surprise, given his age, at seeing how deeply engaged he was in the discussion with the religious leaders and teachers of the day. From Luke 2, verse 48, "And so upon seeing him, his parents were bewildered and overwhelmed." What we see taking place here in this change of the relationship between Jesus and his parents is an illustration of a change of state in us as we seek to practice the newly developing spiritual literacy skills of removing person, place, time and space, while simultaneously also shunning the thoughts and affections that are of the hellish proprium that attempt to prevent us hearing the spiritual principles. The interior states or truths we are attempting to access in doing this begin to assert themselves and challenge those that are more exterior, that have the material world elements attached to them. And as with the parents, we too can feel unsettled within ourselves as we seek to integrate these newly developing spiritual literacy skills that are grounded in more interior truths of what it means to think spiritually and be present to the Lord in another. So, the parents can be likened to the historical goods and truths that have carried and supported us to a certain point, but being more external, they do not enter the temple or the discussions and must be placed in their proper order in relation to the more interior truths of the word that are developing and emerging. The parents' questions mirror this effort to work with others and the word in this new way. Then his mother said to him, "Child, why do you treat us in this manner? Look and consider, your father and I were caused constant pain as we continued searching for you." Learning to read the text and what others share in our life group as spiritual states and realities, rather than hearing and reading them literally as descriptive of places and people and events, is difficult. The latter is the mode of hearing and reading we've been accustomed to for most of our life, and to read and hear language in an entirely new way requires a complete change of mind in how we think, or more importantly, what we think from. To think from the word, to think from it as our heart and love, is to learn to think from what is celestial and spiritual, because the word as the Lord is good and truth itself. It is the human form of the marriage of good and truth when it is received in us, and it is the divine human for us when it is recognized as the Lord. The young boy state of Jesus as the developing state of the word in us, recognize this. So he said to them, "Why is it that you were trying to find me? Had you not seen so as to now know that it continues binding and necessary for me to be within the midst of the men belonging to my father?" To think from the word, we must firstly accept that what it says is true, but then work to see how it is true in our own experiences of what it describes with regards to the operation of the divine in the life of our thoughts and affections, in the life of our mind. But even once we've done this and have the illustrations of it in our own life and have shared it with our life group and have made connections with others' experiences as being illustrative of our own experiences too, there is still the work of needing to acknowledge that all that is received and seen, both individually and as a collective life group, belongs to the Lord because it is the Lord. We see this fear of acknowledgement of the Lord being the all in all reflected in the third question in the contest of wisdom in Conjugal Love 135 to 136. On the matter of this question, all defer to those from the region of the East, it being unanimously acknowledged that the question requires deeper insight and that therefore those from the East should unfold it, since they are in the wisdom of love. And so they do, offering a conclusive statement at the end. And then, as a final gathering of wisdom, all three conclusions from each of the three questions that were placed before the group of men are combined into a single statement by those from the East. And reading from Conjugal Love 136. Man was created to receive love and wisdom from God, and yet in all likeness, as if it were from himself. And this for the sake of reception and conjunction. For this reason, he is not born into any love or into any knowledge or even into any power of loving or of being wise from himself. Therefore, if he ascribes all the good of love and all the truth of wisdom to God, he becomes a living man. But if he ascribes them to himself, he becomes a dead man. The movement in the contests of wisdom from all answering the first question to all needing a principle from which to agree upon in the second question, to then only those from the wisdom of love answering the third question, and then to a final conclusive statement drawn from all three discussions, seems to mirror the movement of how a life group unfolds when it meets over the course of its three-round structure. All offer their work in round one. All look to find a way of drawing together what has been offered into an enhanced image of the Lord, of what is human, in round two. And then there is a movement into seeing how what has come to light can be integrated into a better understanding of the experience of the logopraxis process in round three. This process is the word of the Lord as it moves us through what it offers us over a two-week cycle. It would appear that this final conclusive statement from the contest of wisdom describes a state in which we move out from the group back into daily life. It isn't something we can often qualify or articulate, but there is a shift that has occurred for us, and it is in that that we move back out to practice with and in. But like all new skills and modes of thinking, there is resistance to change, both in our will and loves, and also in our understanding. From Luke chapter 2, verse 50, "And yet they themselves did not understand the result of the flow which he spoke to them." It therefore takes self-compulsion, time, and a lot of repetition, and hence practice, for it to become integrated and part of a way of being. There is also a benefit to having a space set aside in which we may consciously attempt to practice the spiritual literacy skills, and this is one of the purposes of the Logopraxis Life Group. It offers a supportive, closed group environment in which all present are seeking to practice the same skills, and it is thus a very different experience when we are attempting to practice these spiritual literacy skills in our day-to-day life. The hope, however, is that the muscle memory in our minds of what it felt like to practice in our life group will carry through out into our life with others in all that we engaged in. In other words, we practice remembering to seek the Lord in our life group so that we might remember to practice seeking him throughout the two-week cycle when we are not in our life group. And this is the renewed state that we exit our life group in. There is a trust that we have been fed and given what we need for the next 2 weeks, and that structures have been put in place to support the ongoing work of the reordering of our thinking and the regeneration of our love and the shift to the Word as the self that we live from. And so, the newly emerging skills accompany us back out into day-to-day life to practice. From Luke chapter 2, verse 51. "And so he walked back down with them and came into Nazareth, and continued being set in a supportive arrangement for them. His mother also continued carefully watching, noting, and keeping all these sayings within her heart. As a final conclusive statement is placed on the table in the contests of wisdom, angels appear and carry the paper to heaven. An affirmation from heaven of the rightness of what was arrived at from the discussion is heard, repeated 3 times. The men from each of the 4 regional areas are then given awards presented to them by an angel in the order that they spoke: an opal robe for those in the north, a scarlet robe for those in the west, a hat adorned with gold, pearls, and diamonds for those in the south, and a wreath of laurel in which are rubies and sapphires for those in the east. The men in heaven then return home to their wives, who come out to meet them. The men are surprised to find that the wives also are adorned with gifts from heaven. From Conjugal Love 136. Adorned with these awards, they all went home from the sport of wisdom. And when they would show themselves to their wives, the latter came out to meet them, they also being distinguished with adornments given them from heaven, whereat the men wondered. If we, like Mary and these men, can place the new truths we have been gifted with close to our heart and married to our affections for truth in an acknowledgement that they are the Lord, then as we continue to consciously seek to practice the new ways of hearing and reading the Lord in our life, the Word will walk with us in this. If we engage with the Word in this way, with the love of allowing it to speak into our life to direct our daily practice, then the Word will reach out to us with what's required. It is in this way that the living Word as the Lord will continually renew and reform us, drawing us ever more into His goodness and grace. And so, Jesus kept on cutting a passage forward, making progress in the wisdom, as well as in maturity and physical stature, and in grace and favour beside God and mankind. Amen.